Keep yourself in the loop of everything football on the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast. The latest news on and off the field, be it college football, Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12, ACC to the NFL. We've got you covered. Listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Football Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Jeff Malinoff. And, well, we are getting closer and closer to the Combine. Combine officially starts tomorrow. Friday is the on-the-field good stuff. That's the tasty dinner coming up. We got the appetizers before then, but we got some good things coming up. We also got to talk about the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, and a certain running back, and maybe he deserves another chance in the NFL. I'll give my take on that. We'll also talk about Le'Veon Bell and his team's concerns about his health. We'll say that. That sounds fair, right? Yeah, I would say that sounds fair. And then we're moving on to other news in the NFL, or any football news in general that we need to talk about, we will talk about. But first things first, since the title of the show is about Le'Veon Bell, let's go right into Le'Veon Bell's weight issues. As recently, he's been weighed in at 260 pounds. And as a running back in the NFL, who was considered the best in the league at one point before his absence last season, 260 is not the weight you want at a running back. Now, if you know Le'Veon Bell's, height as well, he's at 6'1", so he's 6'1", 260 as of right now. And what I have to say about that is there's some concern. I understand there's some concern based off the evidence of 260 is a big problem when you're a running back. He wasn't known for his speed by any means. No question there. But how I see this happening is, like, he's known to be a patient running back, one of the most patient guys in the league. He can read a Harry Potter novel and standing right there after he gets the ball and still get a 6 to 7 yard gain. Like, that's how good he is when it comes down to it. But I think one of the most crucial things is he's not a speed back. He's more, he can have a burst of speed, absolutely, but he also has a lot of power in him, too. He's just an all-around explosive back, and that's what made him so deadly over the years. And so the weight of 260 maybe helps him be more power back, sure, but is he going to stay this weight until the end of until the season begins? I don't think so, personally. There was actually, he posted a video, I believe it was on Instagram, maybe it was Twitter, I'm not entirely sure, but he was working out pretty heavily, and he was saying that 260 will not be an issue. He basically just called out everyone that was doubting his ability based on his weight at the moment, which is understandable. You want to just prove you make your point. But is he still going to be a top 10 running back in the league? Well, he's been gone for over a whole season now, and that brings in concern when it all comes down to it, just based off the facts that a year off is a year off, and no matter how hard you train in the off season, again, no matter how hard you work in practice, going back into game shape, going back into game mode, if you will, is a big factor, is a problem, is a serious question mark, because, like, it's if you don't, okay, how about this? Let's look at this. If you lift weights and you just do the same workout, let's just say you do curls, same weight, every single day for, like, let's just say a year, then you take that, and then so it's easy to you when it hits December. It's your body's used to it. Going to next year, you take a whole year off, and then January, you wait a whole 12 months, then once again you start up, and you try to lift the same weight and try to do the same curls. It's going to be difficult for you. You're almost back to square one because you took a whole year off of not doing that simple thing. I'm not saying that Le'Veon Bell has gone to a point where he hasn't done anything in a year. He obviously did some things, I'm hoping. But regardless, I would say that a year off from the league is still a major concern. It's still a big question mark. Even when it comes down like the fantasy football, like, is he going to be still a top pick in fantasy football? I mean, I saw him at number one pick for multiple leagues when it came down to it, and he didn't play a game. So, obviously, he's moved down in those rankings. We'll talk more about that on the Fantasy Football Podcast tomorrow. But I think that it's still a serious concern, all things considered, that we're looking into his potential. And when I mean potential, I just mean, like, is he going to have, like, comeback player of the year like numbers, you know, or like MVP like numbers like he's had in the past? Like, that's just how I see mainly this going. Is it's a big concern. It's a big concern for teams. He's asking for a lot of money, and it's all going to come down to who's willing to take that risk. Is it a team like the Colts, who have plenty of money to give up, or plenty of money to burn? The Jets, 49ers were in that talk. The Raiders, like, who's going to be willing to take up this opportunity and risk all this money, basically? Because you're risking a lot of money for this guy. You're obviously going to have to pay him a lot of money, no question about it. But I think the main concern is, will he be worth that? Will he be worth the ticket price, if you will? Because if he turns out not to be a stellar running back, if he turns out to be struggling, if he turns out to be having a slump year, that's a waste of a year of a contract that you paid a lot of money to, up to probably $80 million. Because that's kind of like what he looked around the point where he's asking for, I think, last time I checked, but who knows what it actually is going to be. But it's one of these factors in where you're looking at, there is going to be a big risk involved in taking him. Maybe a bigger risk than most people realize. But again, that's just my take on it. Will I still try to talk to him, try to get a contract with him? Well, 100% yes. It's still a top running back in the NFL, Le'Veon Bell. He's also like a draw. He will be getting a lot of eyes on the product. Yeah, that'd be good for not just the team, but for the business of the team as well. Because let's be honest, every team is a business. It's a business. It's an organization. So how I see this going down, at least, is he will get this money. He will get this massive contract. But it's up to him to live up to that bargain, because I will not be surprised if he doesn't live up to the hype. Obviously, they won't cut him just based off contractual purposes, because that would be foolish. But I mean, they're going to be looking like, uh-oh, we're in trouble now. Now you just took if you don't play to the worth of the cash you're asking for, then the team you just signed to is now going backwards instead of forward. And I think that's a huge concern when it comes down to signing Le'Veon Bell. And this whole weighing in at 260 pounds thing is that key concern, obviously, but when you look comes down to it, I think that it's worth the risk. I really do. Maybe it didn't sound like I was going to that point, but yes, he's one of those special talents where I think he can get back into what he's used to in the NFL, and he's a very unique running back in how, like, again, his patience is one of his key strengths. His main key strength, honestly, is like his patience and his IQ when it comes to running with the football. So looking at it like that, you got to take a chance on a guy like that, because not a lot of times this guy is going to be available in a free agent market like this. And of course, the Colts, Jets, and other teams of that nature, maybe the Raiders too, have the money to pay him or are willing to pay him. So I guess that is a big conversation when it comes down to it, when March 13th, when the official season starts, we'll see how all that transpires. But again, we got to wait about a little under a month, though. We got a little under a month left until that time is upon us. And we will see, because I'm not sure if this is like the year of like the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes, because there's still a lot of other great, like DeMarcus Lawrence is available in the free agent market. Like Antonio Brown is probably going to be traded this offseason, which sounds like that's going to be the foregone conclusion based off like his Instagram post with Art Rooney and how they all both say they want to quote unquote move on. So there is a lot of talk and there's a lot of concern, or not concern, but there's a lot of question marks regarding a lot of teams going into this free agency. And Le'Veon Bell is going to be the talk of the town, if you will, when it comes down to it. And I just think that, but for the Steelers, then you look at it at the Steelers' perspective, since we're talking about Le'Veon Bell. They are going to lose Le'Veon Bell. That's a foregone conclusion. There's even a bigger chance of them also losing Antonio Brown this offseason and then getting a lot of money in dead cap for this season and next season. Is it time for the Steelers to do something they probably have never even done before? And that's rebuild. Look into a rebuild. Don't look to win now. Look to rebuild. Maybe move on not just from your two top positional players in Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, maybe moving on from Ben Roethlisberger, because he's always been a serious concern. We talked about this on the show with Mark before he left. Like this, he might be considered a cancer. And because he's kind of in that place in his career where he thinks he can get away with everything. Ben Roethlisberger, I mean. And so that's a serious concern to me, at least, based off that fact. And when it comes down to it, maybe it's time to move on, not just from him, Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, but just like find a quarterback in the draft, maybe, or in the free agency. I'm not sure when they will even consider doing that, because I think once Ben Roethlisberger is going to leave on his own terms and not get the opportunity, they're not going to have him cut or released or anything like that. It's going to be on his terms, Ben Roethlisberger's, I mean, not the team's itself. So, overall, I want to say that there's going to be a lot of question marks regarding the Steelers for the next years. I don't see them making the playoffs next season. I really don't. And that'll be the first time ever they won't make it 2 years in a row without making the playoffs. I mean, they've been usually contenders. I mean, we've seen them and the Patriots go toe-to-toe in the playoffs more times than most teams place each other in the last, like, 15 years when it comes down to, like, regular season stuff. And basically, their run is kind of like the Niners and the Cowboys of the 90s, because, like, from, I think it was, like, 90... when the Cowboys made it to those two back-to-back Super Bowls, they played the Niners in those games, in the NFC Championship game before that Super Bowl. Then in 94, then they played again, and that was when the Niners went on to win the Super Bowl, and so on and so forth. Like, they face each other in more NFC Championship games than most probably have ever played each other in general. So, like, that's like 15, 16 times. It's truly remarkable. And with all of these appearances and facing each other in big playoff games, it's kind of like what you see in the Steelers and Patriots now. But I think we're at a point where this is going to be the end of the Steeler Nation era, or whatever, that might be the Mike Tomlin era. Maybe it's time to move on for Mike Tomlin as well, because there's always everyone thinking Mike Tomlin should be fired a long time ago. Maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to make that decision myself, but I really do think that maybe the Steelers have to admit this, and it's going to be hard to admit. It's not going to be easy, but you got to be looking towards the future rather than winning now, because you might not be able to win now. That's just my take on it. But we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Lions of American football and a particular running back and if he deserves an opportunity in the NFL once again. But we'll be right back when we get back to you.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Football Podcast. A little bit of breaking news here. If you remember, anyone watches the show Last Chance U, the head coach of the Independence Community College football team, Jason Brown, he was featured on season 3 of the Netflix series Last Chance U, resigned Sunday, which was yesterday, after allegedly telling a German player on the team, quote, "I am your new Hitler." End quote. And obviously that is something that is quite offensive to some people based off the the just ramifications saying you're comparing yourself to one of the most one of the most hated men in the history of mankind. I think that's fair to say. And so it's a very sensitive subject, too, because we still have survivors from that era who had to deal with the awful events that happened in Germany. So it's obviously a very it's a sensitive topic, very sensitive topic. And Brown posted his resignation letter Sunday night on Twitter, writing, it would be nearly impossible to stay here. He referred to the story last week in the Montgomery County Chronicle, which reported a text message exchange between Brown and freshman player Alexandros, I apologize if I butcher this, Alexandros Alexiou. Because the player posted the text on social media, referring to disparate points. Brown allegedly wrote at 4:10 p.m. on field, you German, he called him a German, well, the F word. You have 17 points towards your 25 points. You got an extra point for your not hanging the Lion poster as instructed. I'm your new Hitler. Figure out your life. A little harsh. Little much. It's just, sometimes, I understand he's trying to be this hard-nosed coach type of thing. It's part of the show, I'm not entirely sure, but it looked like it was through a text message also. So it just feels like an unnecessary attack, if you will. Maybe not an attack, maybe that's the wrong word. An unnecessary criticism. Unnecessary being, like, the harsh coach, you know? But regardless, I think it's one of those things in where you can't come back from it. You know, that's something I think it's wrong. I just don't think it's saying something about the KKK or something of that nature, just something that has affected a lot of lives and affects people to this day. So maybe it was just not the right time or the place to, and poor circumstances to mention that kind of hate, if you will. But that is recently breaking news, because Sunday, yesterday, he just resigned. So it has come to that. It has come to that where he's crossed a line and he cannot come back from it. But moving on, it's time to move on and talk about the AAF, because we had some games this weekend, some actually very entertaining games, all things considered, with one of those games having the number three overall pick, a former number three overall pick, that is Trent Richardson, scoring three rushing touchdowns, looked pretty solid throughout that entire game for the Birmingham Iron in their win. But I think the main question is not how he's been playing in the AAF, but he's been playing in the AAF in a positive manner, that does he deserve another opportunity in the NFL? And I say that because for those that don't really remember, he was a meme for a good long period of time. And what I mean by meme is there's always pictures of him running the football up the middle, and instead of going to, there was one particular hole which was the size of Texas, and instead of going that way, he went to the other side where the hole was plugged in by multiple linemen. So how I see that going down is just, that's always been the joke of the matter, at least. Maybe not the joke of the matter, but like, it really dampened his career. But how you're looking at it overall is the fact that maybe he does deserve a second chance. And I say that because of the facts, some teams just need a running back. And this is what the AAF is for. It's for second chances for players and first chances for a lot of those players. And bringing that into, I would say it's premature, to be honest, to do it now. Wait to the end of the season of the AAF, at least, and then see how his overall stats were. And if you need like a backup running back, if you need a third string running back, if you just need someone to fill up a roster spot, then what? There is absolutely no harm into going and taking picking him up with a small contract, and basically see if we can get him and turn it, and then he takes that advantage and makes it into a long term deal. So that's my take on it, at least. Like, I honestly think there's no harm in any team taking him, to be honest. Like, honestly, Tampa Bay could definitely use him as a running back. Obviously, one of the places that he would not go is Cleveland, because they just got Kareem Hunt. And the question is, will he even go to his Pro Bowl-like style after his controversy? He's been out of the NFL for a quarter of a season, I guess you can say. But I guess it's nothing compared to Le'Veon Bell's entire year. But honestly, if Trent Richardson got a chance to play in the NFL in like the preseason or something, I would think that's a great opportunity to really show that he's capable of return of being back in the NFL. But I think due to his recent experience in the NFL, being drafted by Cleveland and being traded to the Colts and virtually being doing nothing and not doing anything but impressing anyone, really puts him in a doubtful mind to a lot of GMs and teams that might be considered to looking at running backs and picking him up. So that is just the main concern for me personally, is his history is going to play a factor in what kind of contract he gets and what kind of opportunities he will get in the future. Maybe his run with the Birmingham Iron is his last opportunity, like, or is his last chance at playing football. Like, who knows what is going to come about this. But with that, the Birmingham Iron did win their game against the Atlanta Legends, not very legendary since they're 0-3, bringing the Birmingham Iron to 3-0. Their other undefeated team in the AAF is the Orlando Apollo, with Steve Spurrier as their head coach, which is pretty surreal to all think about because of his history as a coach in the NFL in the Washington Redskins, infamously. For those who don't remember, that's my point exactly, because it was very brief. It was like, it wasn't to the point of like less than a season, of course, like a certain old Falcons head coach that went to Arkansas after only 14 weeks into his first season with the Atlanta Falcons, which was Bobby Paterno, which was arguably the worst head coaching hire in NFL history, so I don't think Steve Spurrier was that bad. But he did try to bring in his old Florida Gator team, and it's just a long story. Anyways, that's for another time, obviously. But regardless, I think the fact of the matter is, when it comes down to the AAF, it's not just those players that are getting another opportunity. It's those coaches. I look at Mike Singletary. Obviously, I don't think he's getting another head coaching job by any means due to his poor start with the Memphis Express. And then there's also the point of the fact that Steve Spurrier, if he continues this run, maybe he gets another opportunity. I mean, we've seen crazier things happen. I mean, we've seen John Gruden, who hasn't played in the NFL, or hasn't coached in the NFL, excuse me, since, what, 2005, 2006, roughly? Maybe less than that, I'm not sure. But regardless, I think it's going to the lines of chances are surprising, especially John Gruden getting 10 years, $100 million. So, I mean, if Steve Spurrier gets a couple years on a contract, I will not be surprised just due to the fact that John Gruden got that contract. But, yeah, that's my take on it. But we will take a short, brief break. When we come back, we'll be talking more about the Combine and some questions that we need to have when it comes down to certain players, and we'll be right on that when we return.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA, from the UFC to extreme cage fighting. They got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Football Podcast. Before we get into the Combine, I want to talk about something a little more interesting. Maybe a little more. Well, it depends on your opinion on the subject. But the NFL committee is meeting today to talk about the NFL replay and expanding it. And obviously this comes to the terms of the infamous pass interference call that was not called in the NFC Championship game between the Los Angeles Rams and the New Orleans Saints that kind of led into that was a key factor in what gave the Rams the win, you can say, and get them to the Super Bowl. And obviously they did not take that to the Super Bowl because they lost 13-3 in the lowest scoring Super Bowl of all time. The only Super Bowl that only had one touchdown and no passing touchdowns. And probably the most boring Super Bowl of all time. And it was incredibly disappointing, but we've already talked about plenty about how the Super Bowl was disappointing just due to the fact it was two of the best offenses in the NFL going at it. But regardless, with this NFL committee, the rule committee or whatever the committee is actually called, the competition committee, that's what it's called, them talking about expanding the replay, I don't exactly know how you can make the rules so that it's fair to look at certain calls that are missed, like a key holding call or a key offsides call or a key pass interference call or a key roughing the passer call. Like, where is the limit? Is it ending only in do you expand it to only pass interference calls? Only on fourth down calls do you look at it? Like, where do you look at replays for penalties? Because that's where you're going to get a little kind of mixed up. There's going to be a jumble there in where it's going to be an issue. Now, I would agree with the fact that there should be some more looking into penalties when it comes to instant replay and challenging penalties. I totally get that. I think that needed to be done a while ago because there's been multiple calls and phantom calls that have happened where there wasn't a penalty and there was a penalty thrown, like the AFC Championship game actually going in there with the roughing the passer call on Tom Brady where he didn't even fall or get tackled. He just got a hit in the shoulder with an arm. And I think everyone was like, are you kidding me? That's pass interference. I personally didn't see it as pass interference either, but it's one of those phantom no calls that also could have been reviewed and overturned. Or it was a phantom penalty. The penalty did happen, but you could have maybe challenged it in theory and overturned it in ways because they thought he hit his head or other facts of that nature. But regardless, there is a gray area when it comes down to NFL and replays and challenging for penalties. Like, you can do down by contact. You can do fumbles. You can do touchdowns. You can do all that stuff. That's not the issues. The issues is the challenging for penalties might be almost too frequent when it comes down to NFL games because of how frequent these penalties are missed and or are called wrong. And so with that, I say there needs to be something done about what exactly are you going to challenge, what penalties are eligible for to be challenged, and are they up to the coach to review, or is it up to the replay booth to review that, like a challenge on the field, or like do you give an extra challenge to the team so they have three challenges? Like, I'm trying to think of any other possible explanations of how this could all work out fairly for everybody, because that's where mainly this is all going to go, because this has to be agreed upon, and to my knowledge, it has to be not unanimously agreed on, but it has to just be agreed on by a majority. And with that, I look into this and seeing this NFL competition committee, I think it's mainly along the lines of like, how is this fair and how does this change the way the game is played? Because if there are challenges to penalties, I see it as you got to make sure that it's limited in a certain way. You can't just have it as you could challenge any single no call or call on the field and you can say, what are you challenging? I'm challenging that was a pass interference call or so on and so forth, or an offsides call or so on and so forth. So they're trying to speed up the games, and obviously that would slow down the games dramatically if challenges were also working for were working for penalties. And there might be a nuisance when it comes down to that. Maybe that's not the right word, but a certain situation in where you might tune out of the game because the fact there's doing too many frequent challenges, not just by the booth, by the team as well, by the coaches, of when to challenge for a penalty. Now, maybe the best situation is to do penalties only a certain penalty, like, only you can only challenge pass interference calls and roughing the passer calls, or pass interference. Pass interference will be one of the, if they limit the penalties a way you can challenge, pass interference is definitely going to be one of them. And the question is, maybe is it just going to be pass interference, or are they going to expand into more? Like, that's the ultimate question, you know? So it's in a situation where we're in this gray area when it comes to reviews. Now, my guess would be, like I said, they're going to limit the penalties you can challenge, but they will add them to, like, what you can review. And if they only add one, it's going to be pass interference, obviously. But if they add more, it'll most likely be possibly roughing the passer, possibly a face mask, possibly maybe even running to the kicker, roughing the passer, or something of that, or roughing the kicker, or anything like into that situation. But if it was two, it would definitely be face mask and pass interference. I believe those are the two calls that are widely missed and criticized the most. I feel like, of course, pass interference, but that's not really the player's fault or like the ref's fault. That's just them really really cracking down on that kind of penalties more than usual, to a point where people are getting really angry by it. So maybe it's time to move on from that. But who knows? But overall, you're looking at the facts that maybe, just maybe, those penalties need to be reviewed and need to be changed. Not all of them, but some. But yet then, of course, the question is, what's the sum? Like, what's the limit? And to be told, who knows? But again, I don't know. But moving on, we're going to talk about the Combine a little bit here. And with the Combine coming up, it actually starts tomorrow. Everything starts tomorrow, but the on-field stuff, last time I checked, starts on Friday. So that is going to be like when the 40 happens and all those other exercise stuff happens. So I guess in between that time is going to when we're getting the height and weight and all that other stuff. Especially that's going to be the biggest factor for Kyler Murray for sure, based off the fact that if he's 5'9 or shorter, he's dropping in the draft, supposedly. If he is 5'10, 5'11, the height of Russell Wilson, then he's going to be looked at a lot more highly and maybe drafted a lot more higher. But the thing is with that, the quarterback class, there's no guarantee who's going to be the first quarterback taken. It's kind of like last year a little bit. There's, of course, Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State, who's arguably going to the Giants, which is where mainly a lot of mock drafts come from, which I can totally see happening because of the fact, like, an Ohio State quarterback is always highly touted, especially in this, this particular player is very talented himself. So I think he has a big upside, just like a Kyler Murray does. But then you also look at, like, Drew Locke, kind of not as looked at as highly or not looked at as, maybe favorable is not the right word, but maybe just not as highly hyped up. There you go. That's the perfect example. Highly hyped up as those two. Because it's obviously Haskins and Kyler Murray are the two hyped up ones. You can even see Daniel Jones is pretty hyped up, but he's actually projected to even go even smaller down when it comes down to the 32nd pick. There's rumors saying he's going to be going to the Patriots, which may be the best situation for any of the quarterbacks, to be completely honest with you. But if I had to pick a best place for a quarterback, I don't want them to be starting right away. I said this on the sports podcast as well. And what I mean by that is you look at so many times a player starts off right away as the immediate starter for the team and immediately struggles. And the rare cases to me is where you see an actual progression in like a highly touted player after that. A Peyton Manning is one of those rare assumptions where he starts off really slow. Of course, the Colts went 3-13 his first year. And then he goes and becomes arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And then you look at, let's say, a Ryan Leaf. Let's just go right there. He got immediately started. Did start off pretty okay, like first couple of games, and then just went off the face of the earth. Just did the worst. So it's one of those things where I would rather have a quarterback drafted not start right away and marinate, like an Aaron Rodgers or a Patrick Mahomes. He marinated for a year, and now look at him. He's arguably the best quarterback in the NFL right now. I mean, 50 touchdown passes, over 5,000 yards. It really shows his talents. And maybe he needed that time on the sideline before getting thrown into the fire. So that's just how I see it, at least personally. Just don't throw him right into the fire yet. Let him marinate for a little bit. So if a quarterback gets drafted by Jacksonville, I feel like he's going to be made immediately starter, or Miami or Washington. They're going to not start off so hot because they're throwing right into the fire and getting all this, not hype, but just all this, what's the word I'm looking for? They get all this pressure on them because of the fact that they're going to be looking at, you need to help us now. But in the reality, the draft is to help you win later. The draft is, to me, I've always thought of the draft as, it's not winning now. It's helping you become better in the future. It helps you become better later on. Because these kids are 20, 21 years old, 22 sometimes, and going into the next 5-6 years, they're going to be getting better and better and better because they're still young when they get drafted at the time, so they can only improve. But if you put all that pressure on them right away, some crumble, some rise to the occasion, of course, but some crumble. And, you know, I just think some guys deserve a fair shot and not get overhyped going into the draft. I understand the draft is a big, big deal, but sometimes a lot of these draft prospects are 3 to 4 year plans, not 60 second plans, and boom, are you going to be our starter? Are you going to be our best player? You know, I think it's a little unfair, but that's just my personal opinion. And then you're looking also at the lines of, like, that is so crucial for quarterbacks, too, that get the most pressure. And maybe, like, is a receiver, like, this is only for a certain amount of positions, of course. Like, of course, quarterback. I would even put, like, even maybe limit the minutes for a linebacker or a running back or a wide receiver. I know there's some rare occasions that are there's multiple occasions where a superstar comes alive in this rookie year. Saquon Barkley is a perfect example. That happened last year where he became Rookie of the Year. And the ultimate question is, will that mean, is this only for the quarterbacks to marinate? I don't think so. I think you need to, regardless of what position, keep them limited number of downs or sets or whatever you want to call them, or quarters, and don't put them in for a full game yet because they haven't even gotten used to a full the NFL yet. So maybe give them the opportunities to perform, but don't get them in a position where they have to perform at a high level or else it's a complete failure. Because that's the worst part about this whole draft, is these guys get so many different amounts of pressure that it's sometimes too much, and it's not fair, and I understand. I completely understand that. That's just how my take on it, at least. But, you know, that's, I think, for the quarterback position, with the spots unknown of who's going to go where and who's going to be the first quarterback taken, because that could be anybody's game still, not just Dwayne Haskins, not just Kyler Murray, but the Drew Lock and Daniel Jones debates as well. But if I had to make a guess, you know, I think Dwayne Haskins is probably the best, maybe not the best option, but I would be the most, I'd be the most safest option. He's got the size, he's got the ability. He doesn't have a lot of questions. He has question marks. Everyone has question marks going to the draft, obviously, but I think it's more along the lines of just like NFL ready now if a team's going to go for him. But if the Giants pick up Haskins and he goes behind Eli Manning, I feel like the sky's the limit for the kid. Same with goes with anyone who gets drafted by the Giants. I think the Giants is, like, if you were getting picked early, they're the ideal place. Not just because they'd be the first team to look for a quarterback, but you're going to be behind Eli Manning again. I think Eli's going to stay. I don't see why he wouldn't stay. But, again, I could be wrong. But if he does stay, he'll continue to be the starter without question. So I think being behind him, marinating him, like Alex Smith, like Patrick Mahomes did with Alex Smith, I think it'll work out great. I really do. But then if you get to Washington, you got thrown right into the lion's den, then you might not be as favorable. But again, I could be totally wrong. Maybe these guys are ready to start right away. Who knows? But we are going to take a short break. When we come back, I will, you know what? I'm going to do my own mock draft. I'm just deciding right here, right now, my own mock draft, and we'll get right on that when we return.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
GSMC Football Podcast. It's time to do my mock draft for this coming draft. Yeah, that made sense. Regardless, I thought I'd get my own mock draft for the top 10 picks. Just, I'll do a full draft, probably a full mock draft when it comes down to eight. Actually, I don't know if I'll be here by that point, but who knows. But I wanted to get my Jeff Malinoff's mock draft. And the first couple of picks are pretty general, just what everyone else is saying. But then I kind of mix things up. But we'll go first pick, Arizona. They're just going to go with Bosa. I think that it's probably the best. And he's just highly touted. It just seems like no one else is going to go first. Maybe Quinnen Williams. But it just seems like it's Bosa's the number one pick. And it just seems like he's maybe not undoubtedly, but I'll give him like 90% chance of getting picked. Number two for the 49ers, I go Josh Allen. He's a great edge rusher, and they need an edge rusher and a linebacker as well to complement the DeForest Buckner, who's become a man of his own recently, and had 12 sacks this last season, had a pretty good season overall. They definitely need help on the defensive side, so I think Josh Allen will be a perfect boost to that defense, especially in the pass rushing, which would help out the mediocre secondary they have besides Richard Sherman. Of course, they just need help on the other side of the other ends of the secondary positions, and Josh Allen will be a perfect help in rushing the passer. Number three for the Jets, Quinnen Williams, just Alabama's freak of nature, and the Jets could definitely use a guy like that inside on the defensive line and just power through and help out that defense any which way, shape, or form. So, yeah, you go quarterback last year with Darnold, and then you go this year with Williams. I think it's a pretty good 1-2 punch, both on the defensive side and the offensive side. So that's where I'm going to go with. Number four, this is going to be the Raiders pick. I think they're going to be liking Rashawn Gary from Michigan. The dude's moving up on some draft boards. If you see some highlights of him, the man's a monster. Like if you think like Quinnen Williams and all those guys are pretty big, powerful dudes, this dude's just like up there too with them. And I feel like he could definitely put a boost on that Raiders defense. And we all know that John Gruden loves a defensive team, and he loves some powerful, strong guys. So if he was going to go defense, I think the best available player defensively that would fit his idea of a great defensive player, at least, would be Rashawn Gary from Michigan. And moving on, I have my first trade, and this is a trade that will maybe upset some Giants fans, I'm not sure, but Jacksonville will trade and swap picks with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and maybe a future second, and maybe a sixth, conditional fifth, maybe, something of that nature, but they will swap their first-round picks and probably a conditional fifth at best, maybe even more, who knows. But Jacksonville will trade up and move up a couple spots and take that fifth pick, and they will draft Kyler Murray. Yes, they will shock the world. I think it's almost destiny they're going to draft a quarterback. I think it's necessary for them to draft a quarterback, losing Blake Bortles. They need to move on from him. And getting a high-touted quarterback in Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winner, would definitely help out Jacksonville in a team that can has a great defense still, but just needed help on the offensive side to move them. They were in the AFC Championship game 2 years ago, so it can only mean better things in the long run if you go get a Kyler Murray that can. I'm still on the terms of marinate the guy first, but if they're looking to just to boost up their team in any way, shape, or form, just to make their offense just a tad better, maybe Kyler Murray's that guy, because it all starts and ends with the quarterback. And so with the Giants out of luck when it comes to Kyler Murray, I don't think they were going for Kyler Murray. I just said this trade because I think the Jaguars want to play it safe and not have the risk of losing a Kyler Murray if they're keeping their eye on him over Dwayne Haskins. Then the Giants, they were worried the Giants might take them, understandably so. Giants need a quarterback this draft. They need one. They have to pick one. And for the sixth pick, the Giants draft Dwayne Haskins, Ohio State. And I think he could be the best quarterback, the biggest upside of a quarterback coming into this draft. I guess it all depends on how Kyler Murray does at the combine height-wise. But granted, I think Dwayne Haskins is a great quarterback to be in line. And I think if they keep Eli Manning and he be a backup for Eli, I think he will be like benefiting just as Patrick Mahomes benefited being backup to Alex Smith that first season. So honestly, Dwayne Haskins is the best case scenario for every quarterback, and that is to go to the Giants. Number seven, since Tampa Bay traded with Jacksonville, they are on the clock and they take Clelin Ferrell, the Clemson edge rusher. And some people have him pretty low, some have him high. But I have him here at number seven. I think that's the first spot for him. Some say Tampa Bay would take Greedy Williams. I think they go for the powerful edge rusher because this is an edge rusher class for sure. And Tampa Bay would definitely take one to boost up that defense. Number eight for the Detroit Lions. They select Greedy Williams, who was highly out as the number five pick for Tampa Bay in some mock drafts, most mock drafts I've seen. But I think he drops here, not based on his talent, just based off how many talented edge rushers there are and quarterbacks that need to be drafted ahead. So I think the Lions take up on boosting up their secondary big time, beginning the 6'3 corner from LSU. So I think it's a perfect place, maybe not a perfect place for Greedy Williams, but a perfect place for the Lions to take a good corner of that caliber. As for the number nine pick, the Bills, to protect their Josh Allen, their quarterback, they will select Jonah Williams out of Alabama, the number one offensive tackle in the draft. The size has been a question mark for him, but it's been his feet work and his ability to in that category to make him the number one offensive tackle, offensive lineman, just offensive lineman in general. And with Jonah Williams being drafted here, that definitely boosts up their offensive line to help out Josh Allen. And they get lucky by him, Jonah Williams, dropping to number nine because he was touted to go number three, number four, up there in that area. But the edge rushers have become their own separate class, basically. And that's why a lot of these other category position players are dropping. And as for number 10, Denver, they stick to number 10. There was talk about them trading up, but I have them staying where they are. Number 10, Denver Broncos select Ed Oliver, Houston, who was arguably the second pick in the draft at one point. He drops to number 10 to Denver's lap, which only helps out Von Miller in that defense. And that is my top 10 picks. And to recap, Joey Bosa, number 1, Josh Allen, number 2 to the 49ers, number 3, Quinn Williams to the Jets, number 4, Sean Gary to the Raiders, number 5, a trade for Jackson. Jacksonville gets that pick now, and they go with Kyler Murray, number 6, Dwayne Haskins to the Giants, number 7, Clelin Ferrell to Tampa Bay after their trade with exchanging picks with Jacksonville, and probably getting more picks after that. Number 8, Greedy Williams, the cornerback out of LSU to Detroit Lions, number 9, Jonah Williams, offensive lineman to the Buffalo Bills from the University of Alabama. And then number 10, Ed Oliver out of Houston going to Denver. Now, if that's just my ideas, at least this is my mock draft. Obviously, nothing's written in stone until April. But I think this is a pretty clean draft class, or pretty clean mock draft, just based off the fact that there's a trade in there, and there's obviously quarterback positioning and a lot of edge rushers, but again, this is a highly touted edge rusher class, maybe the best edge rusher class because of how many available edge rushers there are. And just in general, how good defensive players are in this draft, you really can't go wrong with a lot of these guys. But that is our show today. Thank you so much for joining us, and please tune us in tomorrow as we will continue to talk about football. Hopefully new news comes about of anything particular, but I will give you anything I can to make you entertained with this football podcast. But as always, I'm Jeff Malinoff, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.